The Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer trademark lion is shown. The wheels on a locomotive turn faster as a train moves down its track. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents The Harvey Girls. Thick black smoke billows from the engine's smokestack and leaves a trail in its wake. It moves across barren terrain. The locomotive is pulling three passenger cars. It continues across the arid countryside. Fluffy white clouds dot the blue sky. Mountains span the horizon. In the desert, mesas and buttes loom against the brilliant blue sky. The screen reads, when Fred Harvey pushed his chain of restaurants farther and farther west along the lengthening tracks of the Santa Fe, he brought with him one of the first civilizing forces this land has known, the Harvey Girls. These winsome waitresses conquered the West as surely as the Davy Crockett's and the Kit Carsons, not with powder horn and rifle, but with a beefsteak and a cup of coffee. To these unsung pioneers whose successors today still carry on in the same tradition, we sincerely dedicate this motion picture. White fluffy clouds move across the blue sky.
When white clouds come sailing to make my wedding gown.
A young woman sings from the back of the moving train.
Then we'll go trailing to the valley where the evening sun goes down.
Inside, a woman reads Fred Harvey's service regulations and instructions for waitresses.
And while the Fred Harvey system neither demands nor expects the impossible from any employee, it does insist upon honest, excellent, hygienic, cleanly, prompt, and cheerful service at all times.
Yes, Ree, Bob. And he means every word of it. You've been with him a long time, haven't you? I've been cooking in Harvey houses for the last 14 years.
Must be well done by now.
Another young woman steps forward and the others watch her.
Madame, you say your coffee is weak? Give it to me. I'll put it on the chair and let it rest a while. Just call me Conscientious Connie, the queen of the waitresses.
Another woman approaches.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right, Ethel. There's one thing you girls have yet to learn. A Harvey girl is more than a waitress. Wherever a Harvey house appears, civilization is not far behind. You girls are the symbol and the promise of the order that is to come. This restaurant which we're opening in Sandrock is the first the town has ever had. Its success depends upon how you conduct yourselves.
She looks at the pocket watch tucked in her waistband.
Now, how about some lunch?
The woman that was singing enters the passenger car. She stops beside a man playing cards and looks at his hand. She starts to interfere, but he discards. As she walks through the large group of Harvey girls, she looks longingly at their food. She sits across from a large trunk, sets a small basket in her lap, then opens it. She removes a lace-edged napkin and smiles toward the young women as she lays it across her lap. Her smile fades as she watches two of the women eat fried chicken. She looks down at the small remainder of a cookie in her basket. She picks up the cookie and takes a bite as she watches the women. A little girl stops beside her and stares at her cookie. She looks at the girl, then looks away and takes another bite. She looks at the girl, then gives her the cookie. The girl curtsies, then walks away. The woman looks through her basket while two of the Harvey girls watch. One of them whispers to the other. The woman finds a crumb in her basket, then quickly eats it. Another little girl stops beside her, then walks away. The woman drops her basket.
Oh, here, let me help you.
Thank you.
Have you ever eaten a Chillicothe sandwich, Deborah?
Chillicothe? What's that?
Well, it's a secret recipe of my Aunt Malvina's. One or two blue ribbons and three husbands. Try it. See if you like it.
Oh, no, thanks. I'm full.
Wouldn't you like to try it?
Why, yes, thank you very much. As a matter of fact, I always wanted to taste a Chillicothe sandwich.
She eats the sandwich as several Harvey girls watch.
Tastes just like chicken.
You have to try a second one before you can tell the difference.
Well, thank you. I hope I'm not depriving you.
If General Custer had our provisions, he'd still be standing.
I've been wanting to meet you all ever since we got on the train in Kansas City. My name is Susan Brown. I'm from Ohio.
We're Harvey girls.
Harvey girls? Was that college?
No, we're waitresses. We're headed for Sandrock to open a restaurant.
Sandrock? That's where I'm going.
Is that your home?
No.
Are you visiting?
No.
Going to work?
Mm-hmm.
Why on earth are you going?
To get married.
Does he live in Sandrock?
Yes, he owns a big ranch there.
What's his name?
His name is H.H. Hartsey, Esquire.
Is he tall and handsome, and does he have raven black hair?
Mm-hmm.
And flashing blue eyes?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like brown eyes.
Well, his are brown.
You said they were blue.
Well, they are. I mean, one of them is. I mean, well, to tell you the truth, I haven't met him yet.
How did you ever catch him?
I answered a matrimonial ad in the paper.
Oh,
well, really? I once sent my picture to a Lonely Hearts Club, but came back marked, "We're not that lonely."
Well, I think it's wonderful.
I think it's wonderful, too. When I answered the ad, he wrote back, "Thank you very much."
She shows them a stack of letters.
Oh, what wonderful curlicues.
And commas after everything.
This is the first one. Would you like to hear a little letter?
Oh, yes, please.
Still chewing her food, she opens the letter.
There is a dream here in this great land that not everybody sees. Mountains and sunlight and the cleanest wind in the world, waiting for a man and a woman with a little vision.
What was so wrong with Ohio?
There was nothing wrong with Ohio. It was just so old-fashioned. There were several men in that town I could have married, I suppose. I mean, it's so smug and sure of itself and so settled. I wanted a chance to do something different, to see something different. A whole new world opening up. And after all, the Constitution guarantees the pursuit of happiness, but it's up to me to do the pursuing. So that's why I answered the ad. That's why I'm on this train.
I think you did the right thing.
Would you like to see my wedding dress?
Oh,
the women move closer as Susan takes the white dress from the trunk.
I must say I admire your spirit. Most girls would have come out here and got married in a navy blue suit.
That must be Sandra.
Susan rushes to the window, clutching her dress. The wind blows through her hair, and she smiles as she looks outside.
Mrs. H.H. Hauntsey, Esquire.
Cattle leave behind a trail of dust as they're herded through a small town nestled at the base of rolling hills. A well-dressed man and a mean-looking man ride up to a building, then stop. They watch as a man hangs a sign that reads, Fred Harvey.
Well, mighty nice looking sign you're putting up there, Mr. Adams. You being the manager of the place, I suppose you're just naturally optimistic enough to think it's going to stay there.
Well, there have been a lot of them put up all over the country, Judge. And I haven't heard of any of them failing to stay put.
It's a pity you're going to be disillusioned so soon.
The neatly dressed judge and the mean-looking man ride across the street and dismount.
Hi, Judge.
Hi, boys.
Hi, Judge.
Good day, Judge.
Hello, John Henry.
He tips John Henry. In the opulent saloon, he walks past red swag drapes and stops at the bar.
Hey, Mike, where's the boss? Right over there.
He walks past gaming tables and toward a woman wearing a flashy gold dress and singing beside the piano. He stops beside a man standing at the base of the stairs watching her.
Trent, I want to talk to you.
There's a lady singing.
These little words I know can never show how true I'll be. But if you don't believe me, just you wait and see.
She smiles, then Trent steps toward her.
Hey, that's a pretty good number.
It's new. Terry taught it to me.
Good work, Terry.
Thanks, Mr. Trent. It's really Em's voice that puts him over.
My voice? He's so young.
Trent walks away and the judge follows.
Trent, I've got to talk to you.
Go ahead, Sam. We're stopping. The lady's finished her song.
Hey, boss.
Yeah?
Say, is he good for a drink?
Has he had it?
Yeah.
He's good for it.
Now, look here, Trent. I've wasted all the time I've got to waste.
Got a match?
It's a mighty nice looking place you got here, Ned.
Next year, we plan to put up lace curtains.
The judge lights a match.
Not if I have to shut down, you won't.
Trent lights a cigar.
Who's going to shut us down, you?
You know what I'm talking about. That new Harvey outfit isn't something you can laugh off.
A restaurant. You ever seen a restaurant? They serve food.
Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, the church will open up again. Now, mark my words.
Well, what are you two boys doing? Admiring each other's eyes or reading each other's epitaphs?
Em, the judge is losing his grip. He's afraid of a place that sells victuals. Vittles and a pack of calf-faced girls.
Those calf-faced girls can fill up a town faster than law.
You listen to the judge, Ned.
This is my business. Let's get one thing straight. We're not partners. You run the town, I'll run the Alhambra. You'll be getting your cut just as usual.
But not just as much.
He's right, Ned. Look what happened at Larrup. The men started marrying them waitresses faster than the company could replace them.
They did, huh?
Did they? It's so quiet there now, you'd think it was New England instead of New Mexico.
Nice women can ruin a town, can't they?
And how?
Come on, the house will buy you a drink.
It's a little better.
A man enters.
Where's Ned Trent?
He's over that bar.
Hey, Ned!
The man pushes his way through the crowd as he approaches Trent.
It's all due to you. How can I ever thank you?
Why?
My bride. She's coming in on the noon train.
I didn't know you were married, Hartsey.
I ain't, but I'm going to be. She's came all the way out here from Ohio to marry me. And here's the fella what's done it. Was him, he writ the letters for me. He courted her for me on paper.
Look, Hartsey, maybe you better hightail it to the desert. I'll meet her and send her back to Ohio.
Sort of a blind date for life, isn't it, Hartsey?
Hartsey, you don't know what you're doing. You can't tell a thing by letters. She probably weighs 200 pounds.
Hartsey frowns, then smiles.
Well, that's all right.
Well, this calls for a celebration. Hey, every
anybody. Hey, Artsy's going to be married this afternoon. I'll treat you champagne.
Artsy's lifted onto the bars. The people rush forward.
Here's to H.H. Artsy and his rosy happiness, coming in on the Atchison, the Picker, and the Santa Fe.
They toast. Artsy drinks, then rubs his nose. John Henry sings.
Do you hear that whistle down the line? I figure that it's engine number 49. She's the only one that'll sound that way on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe. See the old smoke rising around the bend. I reckon that you know she's going to meet a friend. Folks around these parts get the time all day from the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
Here she comes.
Outside.
Hey, Jim, you better get the rig. The list of passengers is pretty big.
And they'll all want lifts to Brown's Hotel, cause lots of them been traveling for quite a spell. On the way to California, on the Atchison, Topeka, on the Atchison, Topeka.
A crowd has gathered near the depot. Train.
Oh, the road back east are mighty swell. The Chesapeake, Ohio, and the ASL. But I make my run and I make my pay on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
On the passenger car.
Going back and forth along these aisles. The land you must have walked about a million miles.
It's a treat to be on your feet all day. On the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
Here we come.
Our advice to you is run away on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Sand Rock.
The train pulls into Sand Rock, and the passengers get off.
Hey, then, did you ever see such pretty femininity arriving all at once in this here town? In this here town. Never seen the likes of this for miles around.
Round and round our heads are spinning, new adventures are beginning.
What a length of calico with taffeta and calico to really put a cowboy on the bus. Cowboy,
cowboy,
kibosh,
kibosh.
It's enough to make a fella wanna
wash your face and hands. We hope you'll never be afraid of soap.
Button shoes and powdered chalk and fancy smells and baby talk. It's awful what a gal it's due to do.
Even so, we aim to say we love to honor, and oh, baby, are there any more at home like you?
Wow! Standing my hair, go man, mistaken. Gonna get bruised up in Africa. Put on the dog and I'll sit and lick 'em. Mr. Harvey, Mr. Harvey, Fred Harvey knows exactly how to make 'em.
We come from Dubuque, Iowa. That's where the tall, tall, tall corn grows.
I was a Lily and Russell of Cherryville, Kansas, but they never gave me a chance.
I finished high school in Providence, Rhode Island, and Providence, Rhode Island is where I learned to dance.
Oh, I'm from Chillicothe,
Ohio.
My middle name's Hiawatha,
Ohio.
I'm gonna get the gold on them thar hills. So I said goodbye, oh, Ohio.
We were school marms from Grand Rapids, Mich. The breeding, writing, arithmetic were not our dish.
I was born in Paris. I was raised in Paris. Went to school in Paris where I met a boy. I was married in Paris, almost buried in Paris. But I finally left Paris,
Paris, Illinois.
So this is the wild and woolly way.
give me my chaps and my ticket. Give me a gun and a holster for my hip. Bang, bang!
Yip, yip. The skinny man from the train cowers. Everyone looks toward the train, and Susan steps out onto the footboard and holds the safety rail.
What a lovely trip. I'm feeling so fresh and alive, and I'm so glad to arrive. It's all so grand. It's easy to see. Don't need a palace to feel like Alice in Wonderland.
Two men help her step down to the depot platform.
Back in Ohio, where I come from, I've done a lot of dreaming and I've traveled some, but I never thought I'd see the day when I ever took a ride on the Santa Fe.
Wanna take a ride on the Santa Fe?
I would lean across my windowsill and hear the whistle echoing across the hill. Then I'd watch the lights till they fade away on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe. What a thrill!
What a great, big, wonderful thrill!
With the wheels singing westward ho! Right from the day I heard them start across the Kansas plains through New Mexico. I guess I got a little gypsy in my heart. When I'm old and gray and settled down, if I ever get a chance to sneak away from town, then I'll spend my busman's holiday on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
All aboard!
All aboard!
We came across the country, making a trip, going 90 miles an hour, baby.
I can't believe we're at last.
When you go traveling, it's time for you to take the
I can't believe that anything would go so fast. Then you
pull that shot.
Everyone waves as the train leaves Sandrock. Mr. Adams approaches the Harvey girls.
Miss Bliss?
Yes.
I'm Jed Adams.
How do you do?
Welcome to Sandrock.
Thank you. Girls, I want you to meet Mr. Adams, the Harvey House manager. Miss Walters, Miss Johnson, Miss Clark.
Hartsey's standing beside a thin man and a short man. He points to the older woman with the Harvey girls. He waves to her and she nods. He steps forward, pulls her into his arms, and kisses her. She pulls away and hits him with her purse.
Are you rambunctious coyote? I'll teach you.
Wait a minute, ma'am. I'm Mr. Hartsey.
I don't care who you are.
But, ma'am, ain't you Miss Susan Bradley, the lady that came out here to marry me?
That's Miss Susan Bradley back there.
Susan's eyes widen and she takes a step backward. Hartsey smiles shyly.
Now, if you ladies will please follow me. You know we've been eagerly waiting your arrival.
Oh, really?
Miss Bliss and the Harvey girls follow Mr. Adams. The girls stop and stare at the scantily clad saloon girls, watching from the balcony of the Alhambra Saloon. Miss Bliss walks back and looks across the street. The saloon girls go inside.
Ladies, ladies.
Miss Bliss ushers the girls onward, then looks toward the balcony again. Heartsy wipes his neck with his handkerchief as he approaches Susan.
How do, Miss Bradley?
Hello, Mr. Heartsy.
Can I carry your bag, ma'am?
My bag? Where?
Well, I thought we was going down here to...
Yes, please do. Thank you very much.
He carries her trunk as they walk away.
You're disappointed, huh?
Disappointed?
Well, I mean, you didn't expect a mangy old buzzard like me, or did you?
Oh, yes, I did. I mean, I don't think you're a mangy old buzzard. I mean, you look like a very kind and reasonable man.
Then you like me? You mean you really like me?
Well, I, of course, don't know you very well, but you certainly look to me like a very kind and reasonable man.
Thank you, ma'am. I like you, too.
Here. Of course, there's one thing I forgot. I left it out of my letters. I'm an awful housekeeper.
Oh, that's all right. In these parts, we live outside mostly anyways.
I'm a terrible cook.
Well, now, don't let that worry you none, ma'am. Out here, we just put things over a fire and take what happens.
Well, that's just fine, isn't it?
It's great. I can't wait for us to be hitched up, can you?
Can't wait.
I'm going to be the happiest man in town.
I'm going to be the happiest girl. Well, after all, that's what I came out here for, isn't it?
Well, yes, ma'am.
Two men smile and stare at her, and Heartsy frowns.
Miss Bradley, I think it's only fitting you should know something more about me. For instance, I chew tobacco and I drink. I'm a terrible drinker and I gamble. Gambling, that's my downfall.
Mr. Heartsy, you sounded... Could it be possible you don't want to marry me?
Now, wait a minute, Miss Bradley. I want to marry you. I want to marry you like something awful. I want to marry you something awful. But please, ma'am, please say no.
Oh, Mr. Heartsy, I think you're wonderful. Of course, if you insist, I'll say no.
I sure do thank you, ma'am.
Well, anyway, I thought your letters were beautiful.
Guys, I didn't even write them letters. They was written by a fella named Ned Trent.
Who's Ned Trent?
Yep, that was Ned's idea all in the first place. You know, I bet you thought that'd be some kind of a funny joke, like.
A joke?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you mean I've come 2,000 miles for a joke? Where'll I find this Ned Trent?
Well, he's right inside there, ma'am. Miss Bradley, you can't go in there.
She marches into the saloon and he sets her trunk on the boardwalk. Inside, she stops one of the bartenders.
Pardon me, which one is Mr. Trent?
That's him, the guy over there without the hat.
Em watches closely as Susan walks toward Trent, who is playing cards. M walks toward them. The bustling crowd shoves Susan aside, and she ends up with a mug of beer.
Mr. Trent!
Go away, will you?
Not till I've talked to you.
It's about a job. Grab yourself a drink at the bar, and I'll see you later.
I'll take it
before. Paul? Great.
A bearded man looks closely at her.
Two cards.
She looks at Trent's hand.
Holding a kicker. My grandfather always said that if...
Hang your grandfather.
If he were alive, it's more than likely he'd hang you.
Trent jumps to his feet and finally looks at her. He studies her.
Who are you, anyhow? What are you doing in this place?
Oh, I'm just somebody who doesn't like you, Mr. Trent. I don't know whether you're a thief or a murderer, but I know one thing, you're worse. I never met or read or heard of anyone lower than you are.
She shoves the mug of beer at him.
You're a yellow dog, Mr. Trent. Good day.
She leaves, and M steps forward.
Well, who was that?
I don't know, but I'm sure going to find out.
He gives M the beer and rushes outside after Susan.
Hey, wait a minute.
She stops and turns to him.
What was that all about, miss?
When the setting sun lowers its mantle of purest gold over the little valley that shall soon be our home.
The letters. Your heart sees...
He looks her up and down.
But you couldn't be.
Well, I am. Susan Bradley.
He takes money from his pocket.
Take this and go on back to Ohio. Nothing's happened, really, except that a nice girl has had an interesting trip.
Oh, wouldn't you love it if I went back to Ohio? Me and all the other nice girls who came out here today. Well, they won't. No matter what you and all the other cutthroats do, they won't and I won't. Now, you listen to me. If anybody leaves here, it's going to be you. You and your kind. Men who run gambling palaces and send lying letters to girls and sell a lot of liquor to drunkards. Before we're finished with this town, you're going to have to swallow every one of those pretty letters you wrote. And yes, I hope you choke on them. No!
She starts to leave, then turns back, picks up her trunk, and rushes across the street. Em steps closer to Trent as he watches Susan approach the Harvey house.
Miss Bliss?
Yes, Susan. You've got yourself another Harvey girl.
Later inside.
The Harvey system, I must say, primarily pertains to the absolute perfection in the way we feed the trains.
Perfection in the dining room, perfection in the dorm. We even want perfection in the Harvey uniform. Stout black shoes to keep a sense of humor. Please confine your underwear to camisole and rumor. Black shirt waist, cuffs neat and trim. The apron must be spotless from the collar to the hem.
The apron must be spotless and must have the proper swirl.
The uniform must be just right, but Mr. Fred has said that uniform or no uniform, the train must be fed.
You're looking just as pretty as a Spanish omelette. But now I've got to learn you how to get the table set. First comes the plate, then the cup and sassy. The knife and fork, and here's your spoon, the napkin by the glassy. You serve them to the left, you take off to the right. Give them ginger peachy service, or you'll spoil their appetite.
Give them ginger peachy service, or their appetite will spoil. Gosh, it ain't great to be a Harvey girl.
Just received the service wire from train number 7. Dining room for 44, counter room for 11.
Young ladies, don't be nervous. There's no need to lose your head. But one thing we cannot forget, the trains must be fed.
The train must be fed. The train must be fed.
Come thunder, come lightning, come drizzle, come sleet, come cyclone, come earthquake.
The people gotta eat.
Come thunder,
come blitzen. Again, we repeat.
The train must be fed. The train must be fed. The ashes of the future and the Santa Fe must be fed.
Mr. Adams steps forward and hits a handheld brass gong. It's night when the train pulls into Sandrock. Four Harvey girls are wearing their crisp, long white aprons over their black blouses with puffed sleeves as they wait at the depot. Mr. Adams hits the gong and smiles as Miss Bliss steps beside him.
Dining room to the left, lunch counter to the right. Ample notice will be given before the departure of the train.
Their smiles fade as they see the judge and his mean-looking sidekick outside the saloon. They go inside where Em and other scantily clad saloon girls are performing on stage.
Oh, you kid, you lovey-dovey kid, my heart is going tingling. If you like chicken, grab a wing. Oh, oh, you kid, does wifey keep you hid? I don't know if she does, but she'd be wiser if she did. I've been told round these parts, let's break out a girlie's heart. I've been told when you wink, that a girlie's chick gets pink. I've been told if you cry, you would make a lot of girlies cry. I've been told from the start, so I guess that I'm not smart. But oh, you kid, you lovey-dovey kid, my heart is going tingling. If you like chicken, grab a wing. Oh, you kid, may I put in a bid? I said I'd never fall again, but oh, you kid.
Several saloon girls dance across the stage while several cheering men raise their beer mugs or wave their hats. Em and the dancers kick their feet up as they dance in unison. Em's wearing a feather boa with a hat with matching feathers. She waves to a well-dressed man at the bar and he tips his hat. She walks through the crowd of men and approaches him.
Hi, Goldust. When did you blow in?
Oh, just passing through. Damn, you've got too much class for these prairie dogs. Why don't you cover the coast with me?
No dice, Goldust, but keep asking. It's good for my morale.
She looks past him, then goes to Trent.
Can I have supper with me?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm dining out.
Harvey House?
I thought I'd stroll over and size up the competition.
Yours or mine?
He stares at her.
What do you mean by that?
I'd still like to know what was in those letters. If I did, I'd probably know you as well as you know me.
It's no mystery, Em.
Why do you go out alone in the desert all the time?
Who said I do?
Everybody knows you do. What have you got buried in that valley?
You wouldn't believe this, Em, but I've got nothing in that valley. It's nice to look at. See you later.
He smiles and leaves. In the Harvey House dining room, Miss Bliss is watching the girls attend to the customers. Susan properly serves soup to the short man and the thin man. She goes to another table and takes out her order pad.
Your order, sir?
I'll have a great big sirloin steak.
One steak.
She looks at him.
Welcome to the Harvey House, Mr. Trent.
Thank you, Miss Bradley.
How would you like your steak?
Rare.
Rare. Potatoes?
Just the steak.
Just the steak.
If you can get it.
We're famous for our steaks, Mr. Trent.
She walks toward the kitchen and turns and looks at him. He smiles and she puts her pad in her apron pocket. She turns to the thin man and takes his bowl.
I'll have your steak for you in a minute, sir.
Hey, what'd you do that for? I wasn't finished.
It's on account of your manners. In a place like this, you don't blow on your soup. You fan it with your hat.
Oh.
In the kitchen.
One sirloin steak. Rare.
We ain't got it.
What?
No roast beef, no lamb chops, and not a single one of those famous Harvey steaks. The meat's disappeared.
And so's our manager.
I think I know what's happened.
What do you think could have happened?
Think somebody stole all that?
Susan rushes into the dining room.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that steak, Miss Bradley.
Oh, you shall have it, Mr. Trent.
She rushes toward the front door, and he chuckles. She stops and looks at coats, hats, and gun belts hanging near the entry. She takes two guns from their holsters and goes outside. She's pointing the guns as she walks into the street, then drops them. She glances around, crouches, and carefully picks up one by its barrel. She searches for the other, finds it under her skirt, and carefully loops her finger through the trigger guard. It spins around, then she grips both guns firmly. She points them as she walks toward the saloon. She steps onto the boardwalk and glances back toward the Harvey House.
Get out, you crook!
A bartender throws a man out the door and onto the dirt street. Susan glances around, then crouches and moves closer to the swinging doors. She peers under them and sees the fishnet-covered legs of one of the saloon girls. Susan stands and pushes her way inside, pointing the gun as she walks forward.
Stick him up!
Em and Goldust step toward her.
Come on, stick him up now!
Em puts her hands on her hips. Susan looks at her and steps away.
Anybody that gets in my way, you're gonna have to answer for the consequences! So come on, stick him up!
She backs into a tall man.
Watch out, men, be careful. I'd rather have dead-eyed Dick than a female with a gun in her hand.
Now, I'm from the Harvey House. And we got a lot of hungry people over there waiting to be served. And I don't want to hurt anybody. Honestly, I don't. But we're famous for our steaks. And I'm not going to let anybody stop me. So come on, get him up. Put him up. That's right.
The tall man clears her path to the bar.
Now, you. Tell me where that meat is or I'll shoot.
What meat?
She cocks the gun in her right hand and closes one eye. She points it toward the bartender, then looks away. His bottle shatters. Everyone but the tall man ducks. She smiles and blows on the muzzle.
Lady, your meat's in there.
She twirls the gun and walks toward the back. The tall man gestures and people raise their hands as they follow her. The tall man helps clear her path.
Come on, boys, get your hands up.
He follows her into the back room where trays of meat are sitting on the table. Mr. Adams is gagged and tied to a chair.
Mr. Adams, are you all right?
What is it? Hurry!
John Henry, you get over there and untie Mr. Adams.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, I need some strong men in here to carry this meat back. Come on, get back to the Harvey. You don't get ashamed of yourselves. We have to keep the feed over there. Now, come on, hurry up.
Let's get moving.
Here, Mr. Adams, will you take this?
I got it.
John Henry, get these down here.
Yes,
hurry up,
boy.
Hurry up, boy. Come on, hurry up.
She drops a gun and the tall man picks it up and gives it to her.
Thank you very much.
The men walk through the saloon carrying the trays of meat. The tall man is smiling and points to Susan, ushering them at gunpoint. She points the guns upward as she stops near the doors.
Well, I just want to thank you all.
A light crashes to the floor.
Oh, my.
She looks at the tall man.
Did I do that?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I am sorry. I didn't mean to let it go off again. You've been very kind. Thank you all very much. Good night.
Good night.
She leaves and the tall man waves his hat, then puts her hands on her hips, then frowns as she looks around the saloon. Later, the Harvey girls are carrying plates from the kitchen. Susan is smiling as she goes to Trent's table.
One steak, very rare.
He frowns at the thick, raw, uncooked steak. Later at night, a man leads a donkey past the saloon. Mr. Adams dims the outside lantern at Harvey House. One of the Harvey girls is listening from the balcony.
Good night, Arabella.
The cook puts a cat out.
Look at that little goose pimple all moon-eyed over a song.
Oh, I just came out for breath of air. Deborah's romantic. Oh, it isn't that. It's just that I like music. Imagine coming 2,000 miles from everywhere to hear a song like that.
And from a saloon.
Why did you become a Harvey girl, Deborah? Oh, I thought it would be exciting. What I really wanted to be was a dancer. Oh, but my family thought it wasn't respectable. A dancer. And you, Alma?
I lived on a farm.
Why did you leave it?
I was hungry.
Susan takes a bite of Alma's apple, then gives it back.
Well,
yes, the three of us.
I don't know whether we're the three musketeers or the three blind mice. I bought a bonnet to suit my face. I had my petticoat trimmed with lace. I looked at the mirror, around I twirled, and then I went out. I dreamed of gentlemen I would meet. I saw them all kneeling at my feet. I can't understand it. My hair is all curled. But my goodness me, it's a great big world. And it's cold. Three girls lean on the railing, then step back and gracefully dance. They join hands and dance in a circle. They go to the rail, then Susan and Deborah listen to Alma.
I learned to sew and I learned to bake. I even frosted an angel cake on Saturday. When folks dropped in, my house was as neat as a brand new pin. I thought by learning each social grace, some likely chap might forget my face. I can't understand it. I've knitted and purled, but my goodness me, it's a great big world, and it's cold, 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 and we'll soon be old. Alas and alack, it's a great.
they gracefully dance again. They join hands and dance in a circle. They go back to the rail, and Deborah sings.
I had no petticoat trimmed with lace. My angel cake was a pure disgrace. My face was my fortune, my mother said. And my dancing slippers of bright, bright red.
She shows her slippers.
A million miles I have danced or more, in hopes Prince Charming would cross the floor. I can't understand it, I've waltzed and I've whirled, but my goodness me, it's a great
go inside, dance, then walk to their shared bedroom. They stop at the foot of three white twin beds, remove their robes, and lay them over the footboards. Sits on her bed and picks up her knitting.
But I'll keep on knitting and doing it well.
She dims her lamp.
My slippers are one thing I never will sell.
Deborah clutches her red slippers and dims her lamp.
My petticoat's waiting, because who can tell?
Susan touches her petticoat and dims her lamp. They pull their covers up to their chins as they lie down. Miss Bliss enters and does a bed check. She reaches up to dim the light hanging from the center of the room. It swings wildly as glass falls. The cook and the other girls enter.
Low down, Carlton Worm, shooting at women?
Young ladies, I'm afraid we can call that the opening gun in the Battle of Cassandra.
Well, you can fight it without me. I'm taking the first train out of here.
A girl gets out of bed and opens a small trunk.
You're not going to permit this crude demonstration of theatrics to frighten you.
We're not going to stay here and be murdered in our beds.
I'm sure when you calm down and think it over, you'll change your mind and stay.
If I stayed, it wouldn't be because I changed my mind. It would be because I lost it. I'm leaving.
Miss Bliss turns to the others.
Girls, I'd hoped you'd have the courage to see this through. But if you insist upon leaving, that's a decision which you'll have to make for yourselves.
Three girls whisper, then walk away. Miss Bliss looks at the cook, then at Alma, Susan, and Deborah, who are sitting together on one of the beds. Susan flashes a weak smile, and Miss Bliss glances at the cook. Susan looks up at the swinging lamp. The sun is shining as the judge lights a cigar and leaves the saloon. A man rides up to him and tips his hat.
Good afternoon, Judge.
So you're back, eh? Still peddling religion?
Sandrock needs it a heapside more than folks on the circuit.
We don't aim to have a church in Sandrock, Reverend.
Why, you already got a church in Sandrock, Judge. All I aim to do is reopen it.
Now, listen, we agreed you were going to stay out of this town.
You agreed, I didn't. You can't scare me the way you did those girls last night. Bullets are an old story to me.
What's this about bullets, Sam?
Mind your own business, Ned.
I'll see you later.
There's always a gun popping off. You know how it is, Ned. Boys will be boys.
They fired a bullet into the lamp last night where the Harvey girls were sleeping.
That's what I mean. No harm done, and we got rid of four of those young ladies already. Pretty good, eh?
Reverend Claggett, you go right ahead with your church.
Why, thanks, Mr. Trent.
Ned, the Reverend doesn't have a sense of humor.
I'm not joking. Go right ahead, Reverend.
I will.
Reverend Claggett rides away.
As for you, you go over to those girls right away and tell them not to worry. There's going to be no more accidental bullets in their lives, understand?
Now, wait a minute, Ned. We're in this together, aren't we?
Yeah, but let's stick to the Marcus of Queensberry rules. We ought to be able to lick a bunch of women with our hands tied behind our back.
That's the biggest mistake you ever made.
Listen, if they want a church to let off steam in instead of the Alhambra, I guess the Alhambra can hold its own. Now go on over there and tell them.
Trent walks away. The judge watches him get on a horse and ride away. He throws his cigar down, then walks across the street as his mean-looking sidekick watches from the boardwalk outside the saloon. Deborah and Susan are working in the garden beside the Harvey house. The judge stops and watches them, then glances toward the saloon.
Well, now, that's a promising idea. You know, I'm quite sentimental about flowers. I was just discussing it with Reverend Claggett.
Reverend? I thought they'd closed the church.
Yes, but we aim to open it again real soon. Oh, there are some people who don't like the idea of having a church here. Mr. Trent, for instance. In fact, they don't like having you young ladies here either, but we figure to overcome their objections. Ah, yes, indeed. Beautiful flowers, church, lovely young ladies like you. This town is going to be something to be proud of. May I?
Oh, surely.
Thank you.
He takes seeds from Susan and plants them.
Oh, I'm sorry. A man's pretty apt to forget his manners in a rough country like this. I'm Judge Purvis.
Oh, how do you do, Judge Purvis? I'm Miss Susan Bradley and this is Miss Deborah Andrews.
How do you do?
Well, it's certainly nice to meet a man like you here.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. I hope we'll be seeing a lot of each other.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Good day, Miss Andrews. Miss Bradley.
Good day. He's nice, isn't he? Well, at least there's one gentleman in Sandrock. And now I know who fired that shot, and I'm going to do something about it right now.
She gives the seeds to Deborah, then rushes across the street to the saloon. Inside, she looks around as she walks past gaming tables.
Slumming, Miss Bradley.
She stops and looks at Em.
I was just looking for your employer.
You've got your own backyard. Stay in it.
Well, you certainly don't mind my coming over to pay you a little call, do you? In return for the call you folks paid us last night?
What do you want out of Ned Trent?
Oh, nothing. I just want to thank him for all the nice, kind, hospitable things he's done for us.
You're letting it go to your head, aren't you?
Letting what go to my head?
Listen, don't fool yourself. Ned ain't doing this for you personally. When he told Purvis to cut out the rough stuff, that was no love message to you.
When he told...
Yes, and when he told Claggett to go ahead and open up the church. That doesn't mean that Trent's going to put on a pair of white gloves and cuddle up next to you in the front pew. If you meant anything to him, he wouldn't have sent the judge over to tell you. Ned Trent can talk for himself. But you don't mean anything to him, see? He don't even consider you worth fighting. He'll give you your flowers and your church, and you can sleep all you want at night. But still, he won't recognize you the next time he looks at you.
You're in love with him.
Me in love with him? Why, he don't even know I'm alive. Him and his valet.
Valet? What valet?
He doesn't even know you're alive, either.
You're not very sure of yourself, are you?
Listen, you little insignificant...
Oh, I may be little, and I suppose I am insignificant. But I must be getting somewhere, my friends and I. Or a significant citizen like you could never be so very, very worried.
Em watches as Susan leaves. On the blacksmith sign, someone paints the name Chris Mall and paints a line through the name Larry Moss. The skinny man from the train sets down the paintbrush and smiles as he leans back against the sign.
Morning.
An Indian man and girl stare at him. Chris lights a cigarette as a horse moves really close to him.
You the new blacksmith?
Yeah, we just opened up and I...
He does a double take.
My name's Peters. Most people call me Monty.
Well, my name's Maul. But where I come from, people call me Tex.
Where do you come from, Tex?
Massachusetts.
Well, take good care how you shoe this horse. Last time they done it all wrong, and I didn't like it, see? Horses like my own brother.
There is a resemblance. I mean to say, you can trust me, sir. I'll shoe him like he was my own brother.
Marty, the judge's sidekick, gives Chris the reins, and he leads it into the barn. He stumbles with nervousness.
Shoes, about 6 7/8. Ah, there's one up there.
He reaches for it. Marty shoots and it lands in Chris's hand. Marty blows on the muzzle.
I'll be back.
Chris trembles and his eyes roll as he sits down.
Oh, Chris! Chris, what's the matter?
Marty Peters was just here, left his horse to be
shot. Marty Peters, the fellow that shot the last blacksmith?
Yeah. He seems to think a lot of this horse, and he did what?
Well, it's really only a rumor based on circumstantial evidence.
No eyewitnesses.
Oh, few, but nobody actually saw the bullet leave the gun. Well, if you're going to shoe that horse, you better get started.
Alma leads him to the horse, and he quickly moves away.
Alma, I have a confession.
He lowers his head.
I'm afraid of horses.
Oh, that's all in your mind. Say to yourself, I'm brave.
I'm brave.
I'm determined.
I'm determined.
I'm fearless.
I'm fearless. I'm a liar.
Oh, come ahead, Chris. Show the horse you're not afraid of.
She leads him back to the horse, and he pretends to shake hands. He tips his bowler hat.
Would you please sit down and give me your foot?
That's not the way, silly.
Alma steps closer, moves the stirrup out of the way, and lifts the horse's front left hoof.
See? It's very simple. All you have to do is take the pinchers and pry all the nails from the foot. Then you take a rasp and file his foot down. Then you take a hot shoe, red hot, and burn his foot to a level. Then he's ready for shoeing. Place it on his foot and drive six long nails into it. Boom, 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 boom.
Chris's eyes roll back and he faints. Alma walks over and looks down at him.
Suppose I'll have to do it.
She picks up a bucket and pours water over his head. She tosses down the bucket and puts on a large brown apron. Chris dumps more water on his head when he puts on his hat.
Oh, doll.
Alma stokes the fire.
I was hoping to be roping something wild in the wild, wild west.
She reaches overhead and gets a horseshoe.
I've been setting till I'm getting kind of riled at the wild, wild west.
She puts it in the hot coals.
I read about them desperate old guys, as desperate as men can be. I reckon it was just a pack of lies. The only one who's desperate is me. I don't care if he's a sheriff or a real cattle rustling heel. The property I've got ain't hard to steal.
She gets a scoop of water.
Your deal. Yeah, they say they have hair on their chest. The only thing I've seen is just a fancy vest. Holy smackers, milk and crackers, but it's wild in the wild, wild west.
She stokes the fire and hammers on the anvil. She frowns, then takes the red-hot horseshoe from the coals and sets it on the anvil.
I was aiming to be claiming me a part in the wild, wild west.
Sparks fly as she hammers on the shoe.
I was looking to be tooken off my guard in the wild, wild west.
She repositions it.
They told me that the outlaws captured you and never set a lady free.
She picks it up.
I heard they held them all for ransom, too. But evidently ransom don't want me.
She drops it in the water.
All that prattle about the cattle being left on the range to graze.
She goes to the horse.
Well, don't they ever have no roundup day? I raise. Yeah, I heard about them western chaps. I've only seen the kind you wear around your laps. Sarsaparilla, citronella, but it's wild in the wild, wild west. I got a hankering to be.
She sits on Chris's lap.
I like romance, but it don't like me.
Yip, yip.
Yip, yip. It's Tudor, my love.
she stokes the fire. A rocky hillside looms against the bright blue sky. Susan carefully walks along a path meandering through the boulders. She stops, shields her eyes with her hand, and gazes out at the lush green valley beyond.
Lose something, Miss Bradley?
Trent is sitting on the ground, leaning back against the boulder she's standing on.
Oh, Mr. Trent. Do you mind if I come down?
She slips, regains her footing, then slides off the boulder and lands beside him.
Oh, thank you.
This country's not exactly healthy for a woman, Miss Bradley.
Why, do you mean because I tripped? Well, that could happen back in Ohio.
Back in Ohio, they'd find you.
Oh, my, it's certainly a nice view from out here, isn't it? Is this where you usually come?
Yes. Whenever I want to be alone.
She's crushed his hat and he takes it from her.
Well, I think that's a very good idea. Getting off by yourself every once in a while gives you a chance to think things out.
What are you thinking of?
Me? Oh, I just wanted to get a good look at a fellow who'd run a saloon on one side of the street and help a church on the other.
Well, you're a little bit mixed up. I'm not helping any church.
They look at the valley.
My, your valley is beautiful, Mr. Trent. Almost as beautiful as your letters. But then
look, I said I was sorry about those letters.
Oh, I'm not angry about that. I'd forgotten about it. I know you had a reason. Did it for a friend. It was kind of like John Alden.
Alden?
Yes. Don't you know the story? Well, it seems there was a man in love with a girl, Priscilla her name was.
Uh-huh.
And he sent John Alden to propose for him. John Alden said he would. It's a wonderful story.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, right after John Alden finished proposing, Priscilla looked at him and said, "Why don't you speak for yourself, John?"
Go on. How does it end?
I don't know. It's pretty silly. I don't think you'd like it.
Why not? I like all the things Longfellow wrote. Miss Bradley, you mind if I ask you something? Do you suppose if I wrote a letter, a serious letter, that some girl might be willing to marry me?
I suppose, judging by me, Mr. Trent, that she'd take you like that.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes you don't even have to write. That's a lot of trouble. Sometimes all you have to do is that.
Oh. Well, some girls are just a little harder to get than others.
Like girls from Ohio?
Yes, Ohio will do, yes.
Well, thanks for the story, Miss Bradley. Now, maybe you better get back to town.
No, thank you. I think I'll stay here for a while.
Look, I just said it's not safe for a woman alone.
Really? What could happen, for instance?
Well, for one thing, you could pitch off that cliff and break your
neck.
We've
got cliffs in Ohio.
There are coyotes out this
way.
What
else?
Not to mention a few million snakes.
He pulls her to her feet.
Well, we've got snakes in Ohio, too. What else?
He pulls her close and kisses her. She touches his shoulder, then pulls her hand away. He releases her, and she stares past him.
You got that in Ohio, too?
She glances at him.
Oh, yes, we've got plenty of that in Ohio.
She swoons, and he catches her.
Oh.
Here, what's the matter? You all right?
Of course I'm all right.
She steps away and leans back against the boulder.
I bet you think that's the first time I've ever been kissed.
Isn't it?
Ha, 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 ha. Big, strong man. I bet every time you go out with a girl, you carry smelling salts.
Oh, did you want some?
No.
She starts to leave, and he trips and falls as he follows her. He gets up and follows her. Later, they're in a buggy as they ride up to the Harvey house.
It's been a lovely afternoon, Mr. Trent.
I enjoyed it too, Miss Bradley.
He lifts her from the buggy and slowly sets her down.
And now we part.
Right.
And you disappear back into the gilt and glitter of your charming establishment.
Listen, how many of those men do you think would stay here without the Alhambra? Sure, the men drink and dance in my place. And some of them lose their money. But at least they get something in return. Fun, excitement. A couple of hours of diversion.
and a headache and an empty pocketbook the next morning.
They race up the stairs leading to the balcony of the Harvey house. Inside, the girls watch as Deborah trembles in the closet. The shadow of a coiled rattlesnake is seen on the wall beside her, and Trent aims his gun. Deborah runs to Miss Bliss.
I was just going to pick up my slippers. There it was. She might have been bitten.
Oh, I don't know why I ever came to this horrible place. I'm leaving.
Me too.
Several girls leave.
Strange. How could a snake have gotten into that closet?
Miss Bliss looks at Susan, who turns to Trent.
Is this your idea of fun, excitement, and a little diversion, Mr. Trent?
Well, wait a minute. I told you we're fighting fair, didn't I?
You can't fight fair and be on their side.
But I just killed the rattlesnake.
That doesn't make any difference. Anybody could have done that. But the men who put that snake in there are still alive. And you won't shoot them because they're your customers.
He puts on his hat and leaves. He enters the saloon and glares at Monty, then goes to the judge, who is drinking at the bar beside M.
You just killed one of your pets, Sam.
I don't get it.
Well, get this. If anything else happens to those Harvey girls, you'll answer to me for it.
You joined up with the petticoats, huh?
I haven't joined anything. All I'm saying to you is lay off.
Trent leaves, and M glares as she watches him. Later outside, Susan is hanging laundry as Deborah approaches with a basket.
Oh, it's my turn. I'll get the next basket.
Susan goes inside, and Deborah looks toward the Alhambra. She glances back, then sets down the basket. She walks toward the street, then glances back again. She crosses the street and peeks over the swinging doors. She goes inside, then stops near John Henry, who's polishing brass spittoons. She glances toward the door, then slowly walks toward the gaming tables. She hesitates, then walks over to Terry, who's playing the piano. She stops. He looks at her, then jumps to his feet.
Hello.
Hello. I was just passing by and heard your song.
You like it?
It's beautiful. I heard you singing it the other night.
I hoped you were listening.
He puts on his jacket and she glances away shyly. He sits back down.
I shall be loving you through all eternity, but if you don't believe me, wait and see. My heart will still be true when stars on high have flickered out like little candles in the sky. And when the evergreen has withered on the bough, I still will feel the same as I do now. These little words I know can never show how true I'll be.
M and some saloon girls watch.
But if you don't believe me, just you wait and see.
Deborah steps away and twirls as she dances. She curtsies, then dances away. She twirls around and kicks her leg high. Terry watches over his shoulder as she gracefully dances. She spins around and her flowing dress pools around her as she drops to the floor. She stands, twirls around, then sways as she goes to the piano. She steps behind Terry and puts her hand on his shoulder. He touches it and she pulls away. She twirls around several more times and her dress moves fluidly with her. Susan enters.
I still will feel the same as I do now. These little words I know can never show how really true I'll be.
Deborah gaze at each other.
Deborah?
Susan approaches them and Em and the girls watch.
I wondered what happened to you. I heard the music and... Oh, Susan, this is Mr...
O'Halloran, miss. Terry O'Halloran. I hope you don't think there's anything wrong.
No, of course I don't think there's anything wrong. I just... Let's get out of here.
Oh, listen, wait a minute. My intentions are honorable. Honestly, I mean, no fooling.
Miss Bradley.
Susan turns to Em.
Oh, I'll be along in just a moment.
Susan approaches her.
Quite a run on Harvey girls we're having this morning. Was there another matrimonial ad in some paper? Look, miss, we hardly know each other, so suppose we keep it that way. Just a minute.
Deborah runs out.
I hear you and the Harvey girls are having a little party tonight. Oh, it's a big party. Don't you think you should stick to dishwashing? Look, we're minding our own business, so suppose you stick to your own profession. Our profession is entertainment, see?
And we don't like competition.
Well, we're amateurs. Don't tell me you're afraid of us. Afraid of you? Let me at her.
The women surround Susan. The Harvey girls hurry down the stairs wearing their starched prim uniforms. They dash across the street and into the saloon. They rush toward the saloon girls and fight. Hartsey watches as the cook rushes forward with her frying pan. John Henry picks up the spittoons. Susan swings wildly, then raises her fist. Two girls fight on one of the gaming tables. Em is shoved into Susan. The two girls roll off the table onto the floor. Susan grabs a stick from someone and raises it over her head. Someone covers her head with a robe and she tries to remove it. Two girls roll off a blackjack table. Terry and Deborah are hiding beneath it. John Henry gets his hand stuck inside a spittoon as he drops the others. Susan tosses down the robe. The bartender ducks as a chair sails over his head. Two girls fight on the bar. They hit a spigot and beer spews. John Henry tries to get his hand out of the spittoon. A Harvey girl is swinging from a lamp. Susan swings the stick and falls forward. The cook hits Hartsey with her skillet. Wide-eyed, John Henry peeks over the bar. A bottle hits Hartsey. Susan hits one of the saloon girls with a rump. John Henry tries to free his hand. A chair crashes and he ducks. Susan sits on the stairs and a saloon girl spanks a Harvey girl. The naked statue of a woman draped in red falls into Susan's arms. Terry and Deborah kiss under the table. Susan blows her hair out of her face, then smooths it out of the way. It's night, and a torch illuminates a banner which reads, Harvey Girls Party, tonight. Inside, two men give their hats to Miss Bliss. The patrons are nicely dressed, and the Harvey girls are wearing elegant pastel gowns. A man serves punch. The tables have been moved away, and the girls are dancing with men in the dining hall. Artsy and the cook are with the band.
He loves it, my beloved baby, loves his biscuits, stuffed in gravy.
She smacks him on the back. Trent, the judge, and Marty give their hats to one of the girls and step forward and give their tickets to Miss Bliss.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Won't you go in?
Thank you.
They step inside and watch the dancing. The men and women have formed two lines and they dance under their extended arms. Susan stops and her smile fades when she sees Trent. Susan is beaming as she dances. Several men carry Chris across the dance floor. He ducks under the chandelier, then the men set him on the stage. He looks at the others on stage, then dances. Some of them leave the stage and he briefly dances with a matronly woman. A man takes her arm and leads her away. Touches his shirt cuff, then dances in circles. His eyes roll and he briefly gets hung up on some swag decorations. He stops turning and looks left and right as he taps. Down the steps and taps onto the main dance floor. He kicks his legs behind him. He taps near people sitting in chairs around the edge of the room. Glances over his shoulder as he pretends to ride a horse. He raises his hands and pretends to be afraid. He spins around several times. He appears terrified, then smiles. Kicks his heels together. He dances from one side of the room to the other. He repeatedly raises his knees high as he crosses the floor. Jumps into Marty's arms. He gives Chris to two men who set him on a chair at the bar. Trent is smiling as he claps and looks at the judge. The cook is wearing a lavender gown and a red feathered hat.
Now for the piece de resistance.
Yes.
Folks, we're going to teach you a brand new dance. It's the first dance ever heard of where a fellow puts his arm around the lady's waist. It's a brand new dance that's all the rage way back east in Kansas City. All right, girls, line up and demonstrate the waltz.
She waves a red fan and the girls go to the steps of the stage.
When you go to a dance,
Do you know what to do? Swing your partner, swing your partner, swing your partner to you. Throw your partner way out. Give your partner a spin. Swing your partner, swing your partner, swing your partner back in. Are you ready now? Now steady now. Are you ready now? Begin.
Can't do it, so help me,
take
ma'am.
Your gal in your arm.
The cook nudges Heartsy towards Susan.
Then you point your right toe.
She kicks his right foot.
Then you go right. Then you go left.
Other couples try.
And you rock to and fro.
The short man falls.
When you get the right swing. And you can't find no folks. You'll be dancing and a prancing till the orchestra halts. Are you ready now? Get steady now. If you're ready now, let's roll.
Terry had been dancing cheek to cheek, and the cook made her change partners. Deborah and the thin man dance in the center of the room while the other couples waltz around the room. The short man kisses his partner's cheek, then pulls her closer and presses his cheek against hers. She pushes away, shakes her finger at him, and they waltz at arm's length. Susan and Chris dance in the center of the room while the others waltz around them. The couple sit in chairs around the perimeter of the room, and Susan and Chris continue dancing. He turns around under her arm, then twirls her around. He twirls her again, and she curtsies while he kneels and bows. He spins around, then they waltz. Trent and the judge are smiling as they watch the dancing. Susan and Chris hold hands and repeatedly turn back to front. Susan rushes over to the cook and ushers her into Chris's arms. He stares at her, then smiles. They bow, then step closer and bump into each other. They bow again, then Chris trips as he steps forward. They bow again, then waltz gracefully around the floor. He spins her and she bumps into him. They bow, then resume waltzing. They hold hands, then turn back to front with their arms over their heads. Separately, they sway around the floor, then Chris takes her into his arms as they spin around. The cook loops her arm around his waist as she glides around him repeatedly. They twirl around, then she glides around him, hooking him around the neck. He spins like a top around the room. couples resume waltzing. And the men bow. The group of dancers move closer together. Susan and the others turn toward the door as Em and the saloon girls enter wearing their colorful, skimpy dresses. Trent looks at Em. She steps forward and reaches into her plunging neckline and removes her ticket.
Anybody want our tickets?
He frowns as he glances at the judge. Susan looks at Miss Bliss.
I'll go, Miss Bliss.
Susan walks over to the women.
I'll take your tickets.
It's our turn to go slumming, Miss Bradley.
Thank you.
Thank you.
She takes their tickets, then glances at Trent, who is frowning. The women step onto the dance floor and face the Harvey girls. The cook glances nervously at Hartsey.
All right there, folks. Step lively now and everybody choose your partners for the waltz.
Well, go ahead, ladies. Choose your partners.
The two groups walk over to the men. One of the saloon girls runs her hand over the thin man's arm. Another saloon girl approaches the short man.
I'll bet you're glad to see me, Bucky boy.
She tweaks his ear and tickles his chin. The thin man walks away from the first saloon girl.
See you later. I'm already took.
Bucky walks away from his saloon girl.
Well, mister, dancing?
Well, yes, ma'am, I'd be right.
I'm sure he'd like to. But you see, he has a very bad leg.
Well, maybe some other time, huh?
The saloon girl leaves.
Miss Cassidy, I ain't got no bad leg.
You have now.
She kicked him, then walked away. Em is glaring at Susan as they study each other. Susan looks at Trent, and he walks over to Em. He takes her in his arms, then dances with her. Susan walks past several saloon girls and gestures for Reverend Claggett to dance with her. He smiles and steps forward, then they dance.
Now you're acting more like a man.
I feel better myself.
The two couples are the only ones dancing.
What little contest we're having. Last year, if you didn't like somebody, you settled it with your fists or gums. Now we dance it out, don't we?
We're doing all right.
I'm proud of us.
Susan and Reverend Claggett are smiling.
All right, girls. We don't belong here.
Let's go where we do belong.
Yeah.
Any of you gentlemen like to join us?
The saloon girls leave.
How about you, Sam?
It's a pleasure, Ned. Any of you gentlemen care for a little recreation?
Terry, Bucky, and several others look away. Marty follows Trent and the judge as they leave.
Miss Bradley, something wonderful is happening. Look at that. Do you realize what's going on?
That's mighty fine, Reverend Claggett.
It's wonderful. Yes.
It's more than that. On this night, the male population of Sandrock, for the first time, turned down a wild time in favor of a good time.
Susan lowers her head. Later, it's dark as she hurries along the path through the boulders. She sits on the ground near a flowering bush. She looks around, then watches the path as Trent approaches.
Did you lose something, Mr. Trent?
He stops and leans back against a boulder.
Yes, I lost a fight, Miss Bradley. Gingham curtains and the flower pots get the decision.
You mean you're giving up?
Not exactly. There's a little mining town called Flagstaff, about 100 miles from here, and that's where the Alhambra's planning to move.
She frowns.
When?
Tomorrow morning. Breakfast train.
Is that what you came up here to tell me?
Yes.
What do you expect me to say?
don't know.
He removes his hat and sits beside her.
I guess I hoped you'd be glad. Might make it easier for me to leave.
All right, then I'm glad. I only wish you'd left a long time ago.
So do I. Maybe it wouldn't have happened then.
What?
Meeting you.
Yes, that was bad, wasn't it? Two people as far apart as we are.
Yes. Now, for the first time in my life, I've got things to remember.
I take it that you don't like memories, Mr. Trent.
I don't pay off. They keep you awake nights.
She slowly turns and looks at him with tear-filled eyes.
Will you be awake many nights, Ned?
He glances at her mouth.
Every night. I'll always be wondering if I should have stayed.
He leans closer to her.
Well, you couldn't. And even if you did, it wouldn't make any difference because you'd just be giving in to me. A thing like this can't be one-sided. We'd both have to give in. Both of us together.
Where would that put us?
No place in this world. Because it just can't be done.
She lowers her head and he watches her closely. He stands and takes a step backward.
Goodbye, Susan.
She raises her head and nods. He picks a flower from the bush and tosses it toward her. She picks it up, then looks toward him as he walks away. Tears cascade as she touches the flower to her lips and holds it against her cheek. Trent rides into Sand Rock. The dark street is quiet as he dismounts outside the Alhambra and tethers his horse to the hitching post. He looks across the street to the dark Harvey house and sees a torch moving inside. He crosses the street as Marty sets some drapes on fire. Trent rushes forward and sticks a gun against Marty's back.
Can't leave you alone for a minute, can I?
The judge watches Trent toss Marty's gun belt aside.
Now, put out that fire.
Marty knocks Trent's gun away. The judge picks it up and aims it at Trent.
Sam, I'm not going to let you do this.
Neither. We'll see.
Marty torches the tablecloths.
You and I are going over to the Alhambra and have a little talk. Go ahead.
Trent grabs the judge and tosses him over his shoulder onto the floor. The tables are ablaze as they fight. Trent punches the judge twice, then looks back at the burning dining room. He runs across the floor to the stage. Marty throws the torch at him, steps onto a table, and starts to run. Trent lunges at him, and they roll onto the floor. They exchange punches, and Trent falls backward over a table. The judge rushes forward and punches Trent. He falls backward onto the floor. He jumps to his feet and lunges at the judge. He drops him onto a table, and the judge pushes the table at him. Marty rushes forward and wraps a tablecloth around Trent's throat. He struggles free, then climbs onto a table and lunges at Marty and the judge. They fall backward onto a burning table. They continue to fight as townsmen and the saloon girls straighten the hose on the water wagon. Clothes are thrown from the Harvey House balcony as the girls escape. People continue to rush to the fire as some men and saloon girls pump the handles of the wagon. Miss Cassidy, Mr. Adams, and Miss Bliss watch the inferno. Trent and the judge are still fighting as they fall out through the window. They continue fighting outside. M rushes through the crowd, then stops and watches them. Trent repeatedly punches the judge, then knocks him to the ground. Trent pulls him to his feet and punches him in the face. The judge falls back against a tree and collapses. Trent and two other men pull him away from the burning building, and Trent goes to the water trough. The bucket brigade rushes past. Susan rushes through the crowd toward the Harvey house, then frantically looks around. Miss Cassidy, Mr. Adams, and Miss Bliss watch in horror as part of the building collapses. continues to burn against the night sky. Later, the sun is shining as Mr. Adams removes the brass gong from the charred remains, and it burns his hand. He holds it by the strap, then picks up the mallet. Men throw water on the hot spots as the train pulls into the depot. The Harvey girls are in their uniforms outside the saloon. A banner covering its sign reads, Harvey House. Mr. Adams is at the depot as the train stops.
Right this way, ladies and gentlemen. Temporary quarters across the street. Ample notice will be given before the departure of the train. Right across the street. Temporary quarters across the street.
Passengers look at the burned remains, then walk toward the temporary Harvey House. Inside, coffee is served at the bar. Bucky and the others are smudged with soot. The gaming tables are gone and the room is filled with elegantly set tables. The Harvey girls bustle around as they serve their customers. The saloon girls come downstairs carrying their cases.
Yes, me. After this town, Flagstaff will be a pleasure.
Em frowns as she looks at the once scantily clad statues adorning the banister. They're now draped in red and white checked cloth. Goldust steps forward and takes her case. Susan gets two cups of coffee, then serves Em and Goldust. She offers them sugar, then they follow Susan's gaze as she watches Trent carry his satchel. Em glances at Susan, then watches as Trent approaches. His jaw and forehead are bandaged.
Em, I'll see you on the train.
She nods and he leaves. Susan frowns and steps forward as Em watches her.
All aboard!
Her lower lip trembles as she stares toward the doorway, then lowers her head. Passengers walk past her. Trent is standing on the footboard at the back of the train. He gets off and starts to walk away as Em grabs his arm.
Where are you going, then?
I don't know myself.
Well, come on inside.
No, leave me alone. I've got to think.
You can think inside.
She smiles and steps up onto the footboard.
I'm sorry, Em. But I'm afraid my traveling days are over. Here, divvy this up with the girls, will you, and say goodbye to them for me.
He holds out a wad of cash, and she takes it.
All right. Stay in Sandrock. And thanks.
He smiles.
Thanks for nothing.
She turns and stops at the door as the train pulls away.
Goodbye!
They smile and wave to each other. Her smile fades, then she goes inside. She stops beside Goldust.
What happened to Trent?
I gave him his walking papers.
Em, do you mean what you're not saying?
Every word of it.
Baby, I'm going to buy San Francisco and put it around your wrist like a bracelet.
Hold
I'm going to put it in your
everything.
Hair like a crown.
I've got a present for the girls in the next car.
He holds her hat as she walks down the aisle. She stops and stares at Susan, who's watching the landscape rush past.
Well... Greetings from the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
Oh, hello.
You know, I bet we're going 40 miles an hour. We're getting further and further away from Sandrock every second.
Yes, I guess so.
We should be in Flagstaff in a couple of hours. You're planning to stop there, by the way?
I'll stop there if he does.
He?
Em sits across from her.
Who?
Ned Trent.
What are you going to do in Flagstaff? Wait on table?
I don't know, but I will if he wants me to. Look, would you accept an apology?
Susan moves and sits beside him.
I'm afraid that maybe I was wrong. I mean, you see, I'm from a little town in Ohio, and I probably acted like a snob about girls like you. I mean... what I thought girls like you were like. And after all, it's only a matter of style, isn't it? I mean, some people wear one kind of dress and other people wear another.
She glances down at her uniform.
This certainly is the barren, blistered end of creation out here. I don't know. Maybe it's good for the men to have a little entertainment.
You mean you want to join us girls?
I'd like to try.
You'd do that for him?
Well, that's what he wants, isn't it?
M frowns, then stands and pulls on the emergency brake's rope.
What are you doing? You're getting off this train.
No, I'm not. I'm going to the flagstaff. No, please don't.
She pulls Susan to the back of the train, then out onto the footboard as it stops.
I don't want to get off. I'll go where he goes.
Well, he's not on this train. Look.
What's the matter?
Trent is riding toward the train. Susan turns to M and smiles.
Thank you, M.
M smiles.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Susan gets off the train, runs toward Trent, then falls. M watches as Trent dismounts, then he falls. Susan and Trent lie on their stomachs and look at each other. He gets up, helps her to her feet, and they kiss. Later, they're kissing at their wedding. Script written by Julie Meyer. For the Emmy Award-winning Narrative Television Network, this is Susan Crane. Special thanks to the U.S. Department of Education.